humans have not evolved to match our modern environment. We are still stuck in nature as far as our biology is concerned. And that's why we get so much maladaption in today's environment that keeps us sitting for long hours. It keeps us commuting, keeps us not getting vitamin D from getting outside, just all the issues that come from our modern environment. What is up, wildlings and my fellow Homo sapiens? Colin Stuckert here, the Wild CEO, back for another Ancestral Mind Foundations lesson, video, audio, what have you. You can find the rest of these over at theancestralmind.com. You can go to the podcast. They're going to be posted there. I'm also working on an archive of all these, and we'll have them in order of, you know, 1 to 30 or so is what I'm aiming for. But the idea behind these are this. These are the big ideas behind the ancestral mind, behind the ancestral body, behind ancestral health. Why do you want to think ancestrally? Like, why do you want to understand what humans were doing 10,000 years ago? And how is that going to help you today? And the way I think of these things is it's the foundation of everything. I mean, from psychology to biology, to sex, to relationships, to why people buy things and consume products the way they do, to our capitalistic society and a lot of the issues we run into with that, to social media and external validation, everything that applies to the human being is informed by where humans came from and how they lived in their natural environment, their natural habitat. Just like a predator, a big cat, let's say a tiger, has a natural environment. Every species on the planet has an environment that it was able to survive for thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, in some instances, millions of years. And if you take that species out of its native evolved in environment, well, usually that species dies, right? Humans have been able to alter things and alter our environment and do things to mitigate this to a large extent. But if you look at what's happening, humans are dying from modern Western diseases that our ancestors never faced, right? These are a creation of our modern environment. And that's why, among other things, understanding where you come from, right? Understanding where you belong, which is not inside walls with cement and cars outside and smog and processed and artificial food, but in smack dab the middle of the woods, in the wild, in the nature where our ancestors lived their entire lives, right? That's where our human genes, our human biology believes it's going to be born into. Instead, it's born into, you know, a hospital, a sterile environment, right? Hard, no green, no animals, no birds chirping, you know, climate controlled, etc. Now, I won't get into all that, because what you can do is, if you want to learn more about some of the foundational items, go to theancestralmind.com, find the podcast, or on iTunes or Spotify. And I'm going to pull up it right now, because I might as well get the numbers down. I believe it's, yep, episode 33 of The Ancestral Mind. It's the foundations. It's the introduction to the first principles. And episode 33 and 34 and on, aside from when we have guests, are going to be more of these foundations. I'm going to aim for getting 30 of them done. And then once those are done, those are just going to be a reference that you can go back to, that I recommend you go back to just remind yourself of these ideas, because really these ideas inform everything. And what you see a lot in podcasting and YouTubing and articles and social media today is a lot of short form, you know, little bits of content that don't paint the whole picture. And that's why I felt compelled to bring everything together in one cohesive list of all the very important things, all the foundations, all the principles of human health, right? And that's, for me, that's an ancestral point of view. And that's why the ancestral mind is titled what it is. I want you to build an ancestral mind based on understanding your biology, right? Understanding where you come from, where we all come from, because then you can make better decisions on a daily basis, whether it's your food, your sleep, getting outside, exercise. You're just going to be better in every way, okay? So today's topic, because I know that was a long-winded intro, is fitness and movement. Now, hardcore fitness, the way we talk about today, for a lot of people is like going to the gym, getting fit, you know, competing, whatever. But, you know, general fitness for the human is just everything on your body and how you move and how you can survive and climb and crawl and do all these things. Like your general overall fitness, your general physical preparedness, known as GPP, is made popular by CrossFit. And if you're not familiar with CrossFit, I would look into it a little bit. I was actually a CrossFitter for a number of years, had a CrossFit gym back in Florida. and really great overall method, focuses a lot on the basics. It's moved a little bit into being a fringe sport today and a little bit more on the hardcore end of the spectrum, but that's not really what the ethos of CrossFit was. I'm not going to get into that today because it's not going to be a lesson about CrossFit, but might touch on it and reference it here and there because a lot of my background comes from the ideas that something like CrossFit and some of these other functional movement, you know, whether it's primal movement or whatever they're based on, right? A lot of it is based on the human body as a single unit versus something like bodybuilding that Arnold made popular back in the, you know, 60s and 70s was based on isolation exercises where you would do, let's say, a bicep curl, for example, to get a lot of hypertrophy in the biceps so the bicep could grow big. Whereas something like GPP or something that CrossFit focuses on is treating the whole body as a single unit. So if you do a complex movement, like let's say a power clean and jerk, which takes a barbell from the ground, takes it to your shoulders, then takes it overhead, you're activating nearly every muscle in your body to make that movement happen. Whereas a bicep curl, you know, your arm is in a stable position, usually locked or supported by something, and then you curl, you know, a good maybe foot, right, from bottom by your thigh to up to your shoulder using something like a dumbbell. That's a very isolated movement where it activates only a very specific set of muscles, in a lot of cases on a single arm, right? Okay, so first, before we get into fitness and what I recommend every human should know about fitness as it applies to human biology, I'm gonna get some recommendations of what I believe the modern human should do. And then before we get to that, to kick this off, we're going to try to visualize what it was like for our ancestors from a movement and fitness perspective, right? Because our ancestors didn't wake up every day and say, hey, bro, I want to get abs. I'm going to go to the gym, right? They woke up and they did things to survive, whether it was or procreate, right? So sex, obviously, looking for food, hunting, foraging, you know, building shelter, building things, building tools, okay? These are all things that our ancestors did on a daily basis, because if they didn't do it, if they woke up and decided to be lazy one day, well, not only would the tribe be at risk, but that person would very quickly weed themselves out of the gene pool. So our ancestors, the ones that survived to allow us to be here today, are those that woke up on a daily basis and got to work. They went outside and they looked for food or looked for mates or whatever it have you be, and they did that enough to be able to procreate offspring and to continue that legacy on and on and on to where we are today. Right, a byproduct in our modern world of these early humans, which if you look at modern anatomical humans, they are Homo sapiens. Like, we are Homo sapiens, right? And there are other hominids that a lot of them have died off. In fact, all of them died off. We're the only surviving hominid alive today, Homo sapiens. You had Homo erectus, you had Homo, there's a lot of, I'm not even gonna try Sam, to be honest, but there's a lot of hominids, whether it's Neanderthals, et cetera, that have died off for various reasons. And Homo sapiens are who we are today. We are the surviving hominid. Right? We've been around, they put the estimate about 200 to 300,000 years. Now, you can go to our direct ancestors, other hominids that were kind of the precursors to Homo sapiens, and you will find, you know, I guess you could say less evolved hominids, right, that paved the way for us, and then all the way back to, you know, 80 million years when hominids broke off from primates, right, gorillas and monkeys, etc. Okay? But let's not get too much into that today. Let's just focus on what it was like for modern humans, which is us, which we've been around for about 200,000 years. And only up until about 10,000 years ago, we started farming and living in cities. And that completely changed the way of life. Farming allowed us to explode in population. It allowed us to specialize. It allowed us to create advanced technologies to now where today we have the internet and the iPhone, right? Without farming, we would have never gotten there. Farming did come with a lot of problems though. And you'll learn about that in other episodes, okay? But for today, movement, right? Which is how humans are designed based on what we used to do well before we had farming, okay? Evolution is a very slow process, right? So some people try to claim that we're evolving to a modern environment. But if you look at how sick modern humans are and diabetes and all these things, childhood obesity, and I'm not claiming it's just movement. Movement's one piece of the puzzle. It's actually mostly nutrition, and that's a topic for another day, another episode. But humans have not evolved to match our modern environment. We are still stuck in nature as far as our biology is concerned. And that's why we get so much maladaption in today's environment that keeps us sitting for long hours. It keeps us commuting, keeps us not getting vitamin D from getting outside, just all the issues that come from our modern environment. So what was it like for our ancestors when they lived in the wild? That's what we first want to explore, because that's going to inform us in a lot of our decisions for how we should build a fitness routine, all right? And that's what I want to focus on today. I'm not going to make recommendations for if you want to get jacked or get big or compete for a sport. Those are always going to be kind of on the fringe, and you're going to have to do specific things and consider specific things. But even if you do that, you still have to keep in mind your human biology, which is why this is the foundation. This is the foundation of what makes a healthy human from a movement and fitness perspective, okay? So like I said, our ancestors would wake up. They would, you know, probably socialize a little bit because we lived in small bands, small hunter-gatherer bands. And then we would start walking. We would go foraging. Maybe we were building something or we had a kill that we had to process or there were some more things to do. It's really hard to know exactly what the day-to-day was. But one thing that we've been able to ascertain relatively sure is that humans walked on average something between 12 to 15 miles a day, right? So let's say you slept in an area, maybe you had a camp and, you know, humans were nomadic. So we might've moved our entire camp one day and just kind of be progressing west or east or north or whatever we decided. Maybe we're following game and where they're migrating south or north. Or maybe we're going to just stay in this area for a period of time because we found a watering hole and it seems like there's a lot of berries and wild foods around that we can forage. So we're going to kind of hang out in this area, forage some food for a while, and then maybe move in a couple weeks, whatever. It's really hard to paint an exact picture because all these are possibilities, right? But one thing we do know for sure is humans were nomadic, right? We didn't build houses and hovels and things like that. We might set up camp temporarily for short periods of time, but we would eventually move to follow game and seasons and weather, et cetera. It wasn't until farming that we really settled down. And again, we'll talk about that on another episode. Okay. So we'd wake up, maybe the group would start walking around at a leisurely pace, right? If we're foraging, we're not trying to expend energy. We're not trying to go buck wild. Like if we were hunting, and even hunting, a lot of times was just walking and kind of stalking prey, and then eventually maybe short sprints to catch it, right? Or even like medium distance jogging to, which is endurance hunting, which you can learn about. There's some books, I think Born to Run is about that, but it's about how we would basically outrun big predators to either the point that they would be exhausted and then it would be an easy kill, or we'd run them off a cliff, etc. Okay. So aside from that, the bulk of the human day was walking, right? Obviously you're walking around for you're trying to find honey. You're trying to find maybe a kill you can scavenge because humans, especially Homo erectus and early hominids, they were major scavengers. In fact, a lot of the theory is before Homo sapiens evolved, most hominids were like somewhere middling on the food pyramid or chain, not food pyramid, food chain, right? And so they were primarily scavengers. We weren't good hunters. Like Homo erectus and some of these other smaller hominids were not good hunters. And what we were good at is scavenging, right? So we would find a kill that maybe a tiger, some hyenas left behind. We would kind of scavenge the bones. A lot of hominids were good at breaking bones open, right? Versus the big cats, which weren't able to do that. So we would find a lot of this valuable fatty bone marrow and these calories and these nutrients inside of bones. And so humans have always been scavengers. If we can scavenge food in the wild, we would do that. Okay. We were also notoriously aggressive for trying to find sweet sources, which is why you can find even some videos today of hunter-gatherers, bushmen even, I believe in the Kalahari in Africa, they go on these crazy pursuits to find honey. And usually what one guy will do is he'll go up into the tree, he'll go to the hive, and he'll literally just hack it down, getting stung the entire time, just so they can have access to honey. It was a very, very strong desire to have that sweet reward, which also explains a lot of why we are today and why we have, you know, sweet tooth and why we love sugar, why sugar's in everything, you know, because honey was very, very rare. Anything sweet was very, very rare in the wild. And even fruit was only available and it was only even palatable at certain times of the year, right? Like a lot of wild fruit is not very sweet at all. And even when it was at its sweetest point, it was going to be sweet right before generally winter, like, you know, when there'd be no fruit available. And the mechanism is it kind of helped us put on some body fat, right? So things that are sweet in the wild, carbs particularly, which weren't that ubiquitous or easy to find, had an evolutionary reward because it would help us gain body fat, right? I'm not going to get into that today because, again, today's about fitness, right? But understanding that, it's crazy how it applies to so much in life, right? How it informs so much of what we do today and the problems that we struggle with today in our modern food environment when everything has sugar or is tasty or is palatable or is heavily processed, okay? So we would do a lot of walking around in nature. We don't walk today barely at all. Even if you live in a city, like, you know, the average rate is maybe like 3 to 5 miles of walking. Like, let's say you live in somewhere like New York where you can walk everywhere. In a place like Austin, where I live, or even Florida, even more so, where everything is spaced out, you basically didn't walk anywhere. You walked to your car, you got in your car, you drove to the store or to school or to the gym or whatever. You got out, you walked another 20 paces, you did your thing, you got back in the car, you drove home, you walked to the couch or the bed or the computer chair, and that was it. I believe the numbers are actually something like 1 to 2 miles a day, tops, is what the modern human on average, walks compared to what our ancestors did, which was maybe 13 to 16 miles a day. Okay. That's a first principle. Humans are meant to walk and move at a slow, leisurely pace, right? Not jogging or running. I'm not talking about that yet right now. We are meant to walk while conserving calories, right? Because if we're in the wild and we're foraging, we're not trying to exert ourselves. You know, and that's another thing. The human body, that's why we, in the mind, we pursue the path of least resistance because it is very expensive from a caloric perspective to be moving and running and doing these things all the time. So we would have done it at a slow to medium pace to conserve calories. Our biology did not like to spend calories unless there was a very, very important evolutionary reward, either in the form of food, a kill, or sex, for example. Anything outside of that, and aside from maybe play, like we would definitely play, and there's probably sports and wrestling and things that we did. Those are more from a social perspective and an enjoyment perspective, right? But generally, humans are designed to preserve calories. It's why people don't like to think hard, because your brain uses a lot of calories to actually think. People don't like to think about their lives or themselves or big ideas or whatever, generally, because our biology keeps us from doing that, right? Again, biology is mismatched to the world we live in today. And these inform the reasons why that is. All right. So we would, walking through the jungle, there's no paths, there's no trails, there's no roads, right? We would have to climb. We'd maybe pull shrubs away, bushes. Maybe we would have a tool where we didn't have machetes back then, right? Like we didn't have tool making to that extent, but we could have had walking sticks and things like that, a sharp spear, etc. We would have done things on rough terrain, over, under, etc. You know, there would have been a lot of ways we would have moved as a species. Like you're in the wild environment. Like in some, it can be dense shrubbery. Some might be grasslands, you know, some might be jungle even. You know, swimming, for example, there are so many examples of how the human in the wild would have moved. And that is pretty much in every which way. And yet today we barely move at all, or we move in very specific fixed patterns, which is, you find a lot of the issues with like the modern gym and bodybuilding and some of these other things. Like, it's not a true expression of human movement. It's not the full picture of human movement. And so people get back pain, and they get shortened muscles and elongated muscles, and they get all these imbalances. Even people that are fit get imbalances. Like, it's crazy. And that's why the primal movement, and people like Ido Portal's big movement guy, he's, for him, it's a way of living. I've been following him for years, etc. So a lot of the primal movement, you know, obviously paleo, ancestral health, etc., these things have becoming more popular. People have been moving a little bit more towards the functional end of the spectrum. People want to be fit now versus big and jacked, which is kind of like, you know, moving away from the bodybuilding. And that's good. That's great, right? You know, bodybuilding and hypertrophy movements and things like that, isolation movements, they can be useful at times if you have specific goals, whatever. But for the most part, the human being needs to move as functionally as possible, right? Big movements, compound, multi-joint movement patterns. The more things you move, the more your body moves, the better, right? And that's true if you're in the gym, and that's true if you're at the gym, just walking around, climbing, crawling, etc. Humans are designed to move. Okay, so that's another first principle. First principle number one, we would have moved a lot. First principle number two, we are designed to move, and in a lot of different ways. We would climb things, we would crawl, we would pick things up, we would fashion things, we would sit. Like, there's all these movements, squat, et cetera. There's all these movements that humans did in nature, that a lot of which have died because we moved to modern environment. I'm sitting right next to this couch right here. A couch and a chair is the most unnatural thing for a human. We would have never done this, right? We would have never sat in a chair this way. Even if we found a boulder that was that same height, we probably would have sat in it a different way. There wouldn't have been armrests, et cetera. Okay. So those first two principles. Now, what else would we do? Well, like I said, we want to conserve calories. So we would take breaks. We would stop. Like I said, we would want to conserve calories. So we wouldn't be go, go, go. We would have take breaks. We would stop. We would rest. We would take naps. There's all these things that we would do to just take it easy, right? Because again, calories are expensive. And in the wild, there weren't refrigerators, there weren't power bars, there weren't power gels, there weren't restaurants. If you didn't conserve your calorie intake, if you weren't conscious of how you were expending calories, right, you could potentially die. Because food wasn't just sitting there for you. You had to go get it. You had to go find it. You had to go hunt it, forge it, even then process it, which a lot of instances took a lot of energy, right? Imagine hunting a big bison and then having to chop it up and carry it back to wherever you were to the rest of your group. Like, that's a lot of labor, you know? And you find similarities into having your protein shake today post-workout, right? Imagine you would have eaten right after you dragged that thing home, and you just expended a ton of calories. You had to hunt it. You had to maybe sprint at it. You had to then drag it. You had to cut it, right? So we would have had plenty of leisure time. And there's, you know, it's hard to guesstimate this. Like, we can obviously observe modern hunter-day gatherers. But if you look at modern-day hunter-gatherers, and you look at some of maybe the potential fossil evidence that would show bone density and muscle mass and things like that, you know, anthropologists, paleontologists, they've guesstimated that hunter-gatherers would have worked something like 20 to 25 hours a week. I believe that's the number I've seen. Whereas farmers would have, when we moved to farming, we would work in something like 40, 50, 60 hours a week for even less calories, less nutrition, et cetera. But again, topic for another day. So we've had plenty of leisure time. We would have obviously got up, we would have moved a lot, we would have walked, but we would have had plenty of leisure time. It wasn't like a 9 to 5 working 40 hours a week. You know, we probably would have done something like 4 to 5 hours a day of maybe, you know, domestic things, household things. And then a lot of it would have been hanging out with our tribe, gossiping, playing, you know, sitting around the fire, et cetera. Okay. So a lot of movement, punctuated by a lot of resting, napping, et cetera, at the same time, right? So we would have played games, we would have played sports, we would have had some form of play, right? Usually with other members of our tribe. You know, who knows what we would have done, but it could have been wrestling. It could have even been straight up fighting. You'd fight people from time to time. Maybe it was some form of game where you kicked a ball around on a stick. It's hard to say what humans did, but if you look at human nature and you look at how even as kids, we grow up playing, you know, other animals grow up playing. It's actually a form of learning, right? Humans play too, right? It's a way to establish connection with other people. It's a way to compete, maybe a way to show your status a little bit, show your fitness a little bit, etc. Right? Now, here's another first principle. We would have done all of these things outside, right? Whatever environment that was, whatever the weather was, we had no control over, we would have done it outside. We would have had the birds chirping. We would have seen green for the most part everywhere we went, right? Because most of the wild is green. Green trees, green grass, etc. Lots and lots of green. There's actually some research that shows that if you add green to a modern city, for example, people litter less and they're generally more happy and crime goes down. So it's a really fascinating thing. Like, humans are designed to see green. It makes us feel good. It's therapeutic, right? We're designed to see green. And when we get put in a place like New York City where everything is, you know, gray cement, right? Or big lights and things that kind of attack our senses, you know, it's no wonder that people are always stressed and in a hurry or whatever, okay? Your environment is everything. Humans would have moved, lived, slept, done everything in nature where there was a lot of green, and sometimes it was hot, sometimes it was cold, sometimes it rained, etc. Okay. Now, that's really all you need to know for just understanding what it was like. I mean, if you've ever been camping, imagine camping with no tent, minimal tools, maybe nothing like a knife or an axe back then, right? Other than something we might have fashioned out of twine and stone, right? We would actually had to make our own tools. Imagine you had to live your entire life in nature that way, you know? And every day, you have no idea where your food's going to come from for the most part. So you'd have to get up, you'd have to be proactive, you'd have to go get it. That is what human beings are designed to do, because that's how human beings survived in nature for hundreds of thousands of years. And then even millions of years, if you go back to our more direct ancestors and then even back to primate evolution, okay? So humans are designed for their nature. We're designed to move. We're designed to move sometimes at a fast pace. Like, let's say we're hunting, we might be sprinting prey, or maybe we're playing. Other times we'd move at a leisure pace. We're just walking around, we're trying to find something. Maybe we happen upon a spring or a kill or some berries, etc. Okay. And then we had plenty of time to lounge around, to be leisure, to gossip, to talk, build relationships, to have sex, to raise our kids, etc. That is the human life in the wild. Now, obviously, you can look at modern life and compare it and see how just many incongruences there are, which is why we have all the health problems and the psychological problems we do today. But this is about fitness. So what does this mean for you and the average person? Now, I'm going to try to paint this as a foundation for just every human. Now, some of those that are fitter than others, that have more muscle mass or that have certain goals, obviously, you can take these things as the foundation and you know, build your routine on top of it. But for the most part, this is the foundation for every healthy human. These are some of the first principles you just can't circumvent, right? So what does that look like? Well, every single day, walk. Walk as much as you can. Walk after meals. Walk before meals. Park at the end of the parking lot. Walk to your car. Take the stairs. Do everything you can to get more movement in, not less, right? That's first principle number one. That is closely connected to movement, you know, because generally for us, the way we move is we're usually walking in some way. But movement could be, you know, anything, laying on the ground and stretching and doing some things like rolling around, wrestling, playing, walking backwards, sideways, you know, obviously playing a sport, which we'll get to, you know, we want to move as much as possible and avoid unnatural stationary positions, which as we've seen is sitting is the primary one that afflicts us today, right? Sitting, lounging, and things that, you know, close the hip, that make you sit upright, that cause all these issues with back pain, et cetera. So we need to move as much as possible. And a lot of that means getting up, moving, taking breaks. You know, if you're working, standing up, sitting down, standing desk, treadmill desk, taking breaks, doing some push-ups, getting back to work, right? We want to mix things up as much as possible, because the longer we stay in a fixed position, the more unnatural it is to our biology. Humans just did not stay in a fixed position for long periods of time, as we already understand, because living the wild, nothing is the same. Everything is random and varied, right? And sitting in one place, like focused on, like staring at a tree, like we'd stare at a computer, would be a major evolutionary disadvantage. Like you're just waiting for something to jump up on you and bite you, sting you, or eat you. Okay. Okay. Those are the first principle, number one, like movement. And the number one way to do that today is to walk a lot, walk and mix things up and change it up. If you're sitting, change up something else, then go back sitting, right? Change it up so that you're moving as much as possible. Right. Now, number two, for resistance training, because our ancestors would have done heavy lifting, dragging, climbing. We would have done things like this on a regular basis. We wouldn't have done them every single day, right? But we would have done them often enough. And so I recommend everybody, and if you look at any of the research, like just for maintaining bone density and just for maintaining aging and health, right? You're going to want to perform some kind of resistance training 2 to 3 times a week. Maybe that's some bodyweight exercise, push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, etc. Maybe it's squatting, deadlifting, or using the machines at the gym. I can't give specific recommendations for this because age is a big determinant, etc., right? But for the most part, we should be doing some form of resistance training where we tax our muscle mass and our bones, right? 2 to 3 times a week, and even 1 to 2 times a week, right? Maybe even twice a week is kind of a sweet spot. That's the minimum. That's just to maintain, okay? Doesn't have to be super long hour in the gym either. I mean, we're talking like you could do your whole upper body in like 4 to 5 movements at the gym, like 4 exercises or machines or whatever. It's really doesn't have to be complicated. And I actually recommend for those of you that aren't really on a fitness routine right now, you don't make it complicated. You make it simple, because otherwise you're not going to stick to it, right? You don't need some advanced plan. You don't need some booty plan or any of this nonsense being sold on social media. You just need to get in the gym 2 to 3 times a week, or even get outside or wherever you happen to do, and 20, 30 minutes, get the heart rate elevated and tax your muscles and bones. That's all you have to do. Okay. That is recommendation number two. So we got movement as much as possible, walking as much as possible. That's number one. We have exercise 2 to 3 times a week. That's number two. Number three, play some kind of sport or medium high intensity activity, right? This could be rowing, running, it could be jogging, even though I don't like jogging that much. I don't like long distance running that much, especially the way people do it on concrete, but we won't really get into that. It could be playing a sport, playing baseball, you know, playing basketball, playing something that's not super high intense. It's going to really depend on what it is for you, but playing a sport at least once a week is great. Like I play racquetball twice a week. Usually I play for about 2 hours, Tuesday and Thursday, super high intensity. It doesn't even feel like exercise because I love the game. If you can find that, it will go so long. I mean, I'm going to be playing racquetball until the day I die, right? It's going to serve me for my entire life. I highly recommend that everybody find their sport that they can play, whether it's an individual sport, a team sport, whatever, that gets them moving, that they can do weekly, you know, 1 or 2, 3 times a week, and that they will do for the long term, because that stuff could save your life, okay? All right, number four, to kind of close this out, low intensity training of some kind, right? This could be jogging, could be like power walking, it could be like kayaking, paddle boarding, jogging on the beach, something that's more towards the low end of the spectrum that doesn't exert you too much. Maybe it's even a form of meditation and mindfulness. You know, there's obviously physical benefits, but there's also psychological benefits to this type of thing. You know, there's just a lot of different things you do. It could be like getting on a treadmill or Stairmaster and just going for like 20 minutes on like an incline. You know, it doesn't have to be crazy intense. You don't have to be sweating up a storm, but you should be moving. And that is the fourth recommendation. Now, real quick, before we close out today's show, I want to give you a couple overrated things in fitness and some of the just things that people get wrong in recommendations or following fitness gurus or whatever. You don't have to do high intensity training all the time. I recommend you do it sometimes though, like a good sprint, maybe once a week, right? At least, or every 2 weeks. And then you can kind of do the rest that we do, especially if you're doing the rest here. If you're moving a lot, if you're walking a lot, if you're playing some kind of sport and some low intensity activity, you don't really need to be doing CrossFit every day or doing crazy WADs or AMRAPs or any of this stuff. Like, you know, that if you have a goal towards that and you want to do that, that's great. But You don't need to do it. The average person does not need to do it all the time. They should, he or she should do it sometimes for sure, because that's what our ancestors would have done, right? If there's a big tiger coming up on us, you better believe we're going to be sprinting our ass off for our life. If we're hunting a big game that we've wounded and that we need to kind of get to basically survive, we're going to be sprinting after it. So there's a lot of instances where we would have done some high intensity stuff for short periods of time, okay? But it doesn't have to be all time. It doesn't have to be daily. It doesn't have to be multiple times a week. You know, I would say once a week, probably a good sweet spot. Twice a week if you have some goals, etc. And then running, real quick. Running on hard surfaces for long distance. I know everyone thinks it's the most amazing thing, but it's actually really hard on the body. In a lot of cases, it can increase stress in the body, which can lead to inflammation, which can lead to fat gain. You can see a lot of runners that aren't really in shape. And that's from repeated stress over and over and over again from running on hard surfaces, you know, for long distances. And it's just not super natural to our species. If anything, our ancestors as endurance athletes would have ran at slow to medium pace, and they would have done it in a wild natural setting, not on a track or on the cement, which has no give whatsoever. Okay. And it's the same step every single time. You know, imagine running in the woods or even on a grassland. Like, you're running left, right, upside down. You're paying attention to where you're stepping. You might be stepping up or down or left or right. You're getting all these other movement patterns in there, which helps make you a more anti-fragile, even robust human, right? Versus running on the same path, the same density, and the same direction the entire time. It's just not natural. Okay. So that's going to be it for today's show. I hope I kind of completely crushed the fitness and movement end of this. I hope you understand where you came from, why you're designed the way you are, and now you have a baseline foundation for how your human biology is designed from a fitness perspective. If you do these things on this list, obviously listen to your body, test and tweak your recovery, add more, add less of things that are kind of working for you and those that are not, and you'll come up with the best fitness plan that no social media, internet marketing guru, whatever, could ever design for you. It's going to be based on your biology. It's going to be based on you and your individual body, and it's going to be based on what you like and don't like to do. And that's what I recommend everybody do. So make sure you like and subscribe and follow along. Obviously, subscribe, leave us an iTunes review. You'll find this on YouTube as well. So make sure you subscribe there. If there's anything I can ever do to help, you can shoot me an email to info@wildfoods.co. I'll get the email there. And again, the show is sponsored by Wild Foods Co. Get your premium superfood ingredients from wildfoods.co. Use code WILDCEO for 10% off your entire order. This is the stuff that I use on a daily basis. I won't get into the whole Wild Foods story, but you know, it's a company that I founded when I was sick and tired of the food system and I wanted to trust the foods and supplements I put in my body. And so I started with one product, and then it grew to 2, 3, 4, 5. And now we are to where we are today. My full supplement and food needs, there it is, wildfoods.co. Use code WILDCEO. Thanks for listening and or watching.
Please always remember that the members of the Ancestral Mind podcast are not, in fact, medical professionals. They're not doctors. They're not nutritionists. They are simply providing this entertainment for you to do your own research and to entertain yourselves. So please consult a physician before changing your diet. Not everything works for everybody. And make sure you always do your own research on everything you hear on this show and outside.